Hello and welcome to the Q1 Hotchkiss & Wiley High Yield Market Update Podcast. My name is John Hosse, and I am joined today by Mark Yudof, Portfolio Manager on the High Yield Strategy. Today, we will be providing an update on performance for the first quarter of 2020, as well as providing an outlook on what we believe the remainder of the year will bring for the high yield market more generally. Mark, let's start with a look back on what transpired in Q1 and how that impacted performance for the Hotchkiss & Wiley High Yield Strategy.
Okay, John, thank you. It's really a tale of the big picture. And I'm going to go through a little background because I think it's helpful and informative. And first quarter performance was kind of a narrative that unfolded in front of us that I think informs performance. So the stock market reached highs in the third week of February. High yield was a little earlier than that, but about the same time frame. And immediately after that, we started to see more information about COVID-19, the pandemic start to seep into the news flow, particularly as it related to economic turmoil in China as a result of the pandemic there, accelerations in Italy of caseloads and then cases in the United States. And it's very interesting because right after that third week in February, the risk markets really started to unwind. In that week following, so last week of February, OAS and high yield widened from 370 basis points to 525 in the final week. At the end of that week, at the very end of February, the Fed cuts overnight rates by 50 basis points, kind of a early start to what will be a wave of both Federal Reserve and fiscal support to kind of bolster the economy and hopefully offset the subsequent moves that were used to try to stave off the effects of the pandemic. So anyway, for the subsequent 3 weeks, before the fiscal results had really come to play and before the Fed did the final cuts in rates, it was just a free fall in high yield. High yield backed up from 525 at the end of February to about 1,082 in March, at March 23. You know, that 550, 560 basis points of widening was the most violent spread widening that we've seen since the global financial crisis. By the way, in that period of time, it was about 1,200 basis points of widening from August 08 to August, I mean, to December, third week in December 2008. What's important about this is that you got to put it in context as it relates to our strategy. During those violent periods of upheaval in the market, the difference between small caps and large caps becomes very apparent. Large caps become, there's basically a student body right kind of movement into the more liquid, larger capitalization parts of the market. And what we've seen historically during these kind of early phases of contractions is that small caps underperform large caps. And that's exactly what we saw in the second quarter of 20. Now, timing's important because we draw kind of synthetic distinctions about month end for performance measurement. And frankly, if we'd made the performance measurement in March, about a week, a little over a week earlier, much of the performance or the picture in the performance would be quite different. And by that, I mean, we saw in broad terms, large caps tightened about, well, during the second quarter from March 23 or through March 23, Schmidt spreads went from 418 to 1124, so 716 basis points. Large caps widened from 349 to 1062. Okay, so a similar kind of magnitude in the very front end, but at the last part of March, Fed cut the rates, and when the fiscal packages come through, we started to see a really dramatic large cap rally that left the small caps behind. And we saw 250 basis points of tightening in the last week in the large cap market, and we only saw 69 basis points in the small cap market. So we reach our wides in late March. The fiscal packages, Fed comes in with another, cuts rates to almost zero, and we see a really large rally in the large caps, and small caps really don't move. In performance terms, for the first quarter, the broad market was down 13%, Large caps were only down 11.5%, so 150 basis points better than the broad market. And shockingly, SMIDs were down almost 20% in the first quarter, down a full 8.4% of underperformance versus large caps, and actually a full 8% worse than the BBB index, which is our market. I mean, frankly, the Hotchkiss and Wiley high yield strategy was down a little over 1670 for that period, which was 476 basis points of underperformance versus the BBB index. I mean, frankly, at the end of the month, we were actually surprised that our performance held in there as well as it did, given that we outperform small caps as much as we did in the quarter. When we do some attribution, we conclude that about 75% of the underweight was strictly the structural overweight to small caps that we have in the portfolio. Now, certainly in the quarter, just to round up attribution, there was some notable kind of sectoral performance that kind of rounded out the unperformance. It was influenced, I will say, by the contraction in the economy because of the very nature of the two sectors that I'm going to mention. First of all, was retail. In that case, we had some retail positions in Ascena bank debt, which was a drag. We also had some positions in a reorganized equity of Quicksilver. Big question mark on retail as it relates to COVID-19 kind of forced closure of retail across the country. How long do these guys have that they can sit on negative cash flow? In the case of Quicksilver, it's not as big a problem. It's more of a mark-to-market of multiple compression. In the case of Ascena, it was certainly something, big question mark. That is the company that owns Ann Taylor, the brand. And it's certainly a question about their survivability. You know, both positions were drags on the portfolio. The other aspect of the portfolio, it somewhat top-down, but certainly small cap related, was energy, EMP, Callon, Unit, Moss Creek, and Lone Star were all significant drags on the portfolio. Interestingly enough, the historic kind of decline in WTI that was kind of a result of plunging demand for oil as everyone kind of sheltered in place, no one's driving, all those things, industrial production grinds to a halt globally, kind of historic declines in WTI or oil, you know, ended up hurting E&P companies pretty dramatically. Three of the four names that I mentioned, those four names that were the majority of the drag in the portfolio on the E&P, on the energy side, were small caps. And so it was a combination. The structural bet or the performance for underperformance for the first quarter was a structural SMID orientation dominated the performance. We've seen that before. It comes back. We think it's a tailwind going forward. The E&P and the retail, those were really much more credit-centric, but downside performance was accentuated by the fundamentals we've seen in the market.
Thanks, Mark. And have you made any changes to the portfolio in the last few weeks to help mitigate some of the macro challenges or made any sector reallocations?
Well, I mean, actually, the biggest thing that we thought about is that when we observe the dislocation that occurred in the second quarter in SMIDs versus large cap, I mean, we're at historic levels. I mean, the spread between SMIDs and large caps is really over three standard deviations. So it's really a historic kind of dislocation. We're comfortable with that bet. We have it on in 2/3 of the portfolio. You know, it's really all about the performance there. It coming back, we believe will come back. It's just a matter of time. And the particularly important part of the time thing is how fast does the economy recover? You know, kind of the V or the U question. What we did in that case, so we feel strongly that we have valuation support for the structural SMID bias, and that's going to be a great engine for performance going forward. But we need to go back and look at liquidity in those positions and make sure that in the companies underlying those positions, make sure that they can sit on a somewhat protracted period of time of cash flow needs. We've gone back through that drill. Nearly 90% of our companies have meet that criteria. And so what we did is we're We're holding on to the SMID position, adding to those and defending those positions that we feel, you know, have a strong position going either into a V or more likely a U kind of recovery. And so we've kind of locked in very favorable economics going forward for that part of the portfolio. What we've devised, though, is a strategy that's kind of a barbell in liquidity. On one hand, the bulk of the portfolio, relatively shorter duration, is sitting in the SMID portfolio. And again, we've culled that for opportunities that we feel like they could be liquidated or at least not added to because of liquidity risk on their balance sheets. The balance of the portfolio, though, we identified as we want to take advantage of some big liquid names that have the best chance of leading the recovery in the high yield market out. And so we picked a handful of names, very big liquid, cheap securities, with a couple other fallen angels that we feel are strong, large cap names that are going to enable the portfolio to move out of the recovery very quickly. And then we can kind of take time to see the compression between SMIDs and large caps. So this liquidity barbell is really the biggest structural change that we've undertaken in the portfolio. And we believe this takes advantage of the SMID dislocation, and it also avails us the opportunity that that we'll talk about if we turn our attention to fallen angels, perhaps.
Now, Mark, you mentioned earlier that the large cap credits came off the lows, outperformed small caps pretty broadly. Is that something that you would typically see? I know that we talk a lot about small caps leading coming out of a market downturn, but it seems like this might have been a bit unique, or maybe it wasn't. How do you
Well,
do that?
if you go back in time, in the global financial crisis, you saw basically a similar kind of behavior where small caps and large caps, they both backed up kind of in unison, and then the rally really started in the large cap portion of the marketplace. In the early phase of recovery of the global financial crisis, it was all about large caps. In that case, the fallen angels in that area was some autos and cyclicals, but mainly it was financials. And they led the first half of the recovery out. It was followed in year terms in 2009, 10, and 11 with small caps catching up. So it's not unusual. What is unusual is the deterioration of the economy going from kind of a pretty good clip on GDP, but absolute full employment and low inflation to massive unemployment and an economy on the ground to basically a halt in a matter of weeks. I mean, that is definitely unusual. There's no history for that. So the markets are roughly behaving the way they have historically. Another aspect is some of the things that we think are going to be fallen angels haven't really fallen in yet. They've fallen in yield, but they're not in the benchmark. So there's a lot of transition things going on. The Fed also, in their effort to bolster the market, specifically cited companies that were still investment grade in the latter part of March. And as long as they stay double B, they've sent the signal that they'd be willing to potentially buy those as part of their support program in secondary market purchases. So that part of the market, I think, is unique this time versus the kind of financial guarantees that and purchases that were done under TARP during the global financial crisis.
Now, when you're looking ahead for the remainder of the year, Mark, how have you adjusted your expectations of fundamentals, technicals, and overall valuations for the high yield space?
The fundamentals remain still very depressed, right? This COVID shutdown, we're still trying to accumulate the impact and or try to understand it. I mean, consensus says that GDP is going to be down 3.5% for 2020. I'm not sure how realistic that number is because it won't be until, you know, we won't see that number for a couple months. Until next year. The quarterly numbers are going to be just horrible. So the fundamentals remain very weak. I mean, I think that our job is to kind of look through those fundamentals, and it gets back to whether or not we're going to see a sharp recovery or maybe maybe a more protracted recovery. We're in the camp that we think it's going to be a protracted recovery. Goes back to my liquidity barbell. We think that we're positioned to take advantage of that with the liquid part of our portfolio. And we think that as we've seen in the post-global financial crisis, the 2011 slowdown, the 2014-15 metals and mining and energy slowdown, that small caps will come back. It's just going to, you know, kind of take some time and depends on the shape of the recovery. So we think it's probably going to take a little while into 2021. We think technically we're running at kind of a pretty good level of new issuance into mid-February. Then it just dried up, went to zero. Then the Fed cut rates, then started cutting rates. Then we started to see buying programs coming in March, more rate declines. I mean, we've seen coming out of the beginning of the large cap rally in March, we've seen a lot of new issuance in the investment grade space, rescue financing or bolstering liquidity. We've seen a lot of issuance in high yield. Right now, we're running at a run rate that would equal last year's issuance. I mean, I think it's a combination of things, low rates, trying to bolster liquidity in front of an uncertain second quarter and probably an uncertain second half of the year. And then just, as I said, valuations are cheap for people to term out debt. I think that valuations getting to the absolute point of the box, valuations still look very attractive, particularly in small caps. I mean, large caps have contracted from well over 1,000 by, you know, over 400 basis points. But we don't think that's kind of a broad kind of perspective on the market. We think that small caps are still very cheap. We think that there's a ton of fallen angels that are going to come into the market in the coming quarters, as much as $300 billion on a, you know, kind of low 1.2, 1.4 trillion size market. So a material new supply into the high yield market. We think that's going to be very positive. So technically looks solid for the high yield market. Went from kind of weak to much better. Valuation still very strong. It's just kind of looking through the weak fundamentals in the near term that I think you got to do. So from our perspective, high yield looks attractive. You might have to hold your nose for some volatility that comes down or pops up down the road. I mean, second quarter earnings is going to be very important. What companies can say about how they performed and whether or not they're seeing a quick turnaround or a weak turnaround, or is there supply chain problems or are there employment problems? I mean, those are all going to be really material bits of information that will arrive shortly after the end of the second quarter. I mean, even first quarter numbers, the earnings thing, the season that we're in the middle of, is very meaningful, although it's not with full information. So, I mean, our perspective is that valuations are attractive, technicals are supportive, and you just got to look through the fundamentals, I think, because we think that the economy does come back.
Yeah, it will certainly come back, but it just might take a little longer, as you mentioned. Do you think in the meantime, there's a chance that we retest spread wides before this is all said and done?
I mean, I think there certainly is a chance. I mean, if it becomes clear that the time to restart the economy is longer than expected, if there are some kind of unanticipated consequences of the forced shutdown, I'm seeing store closures as I drive down the street in my neighborhood accelerating, and I don't know how to turn that around. So that's going to be important. I think the markets, you know, right now we're still in the halo a little bit of don't fight the Fed, because the Fed has basically pulled out all the stops to ensure that we have a reasonably functioning credit markets, and even to the extent that they'd be willing to support ETFs. You know, I think that's what the market is kind of fixated on. I think that once we get through first quarter earnings season and really start to see performance going into second quarter, that's what That's when, you know, when we start hearing earnings coming out in second quarter, and if they're really bad and the outlook is still bad, I mean, I think you could test the lows. I don't think that's the way it's going to play out, though. I think we'll probably have some volatility. It's possible we test the lows again, but I think we're probably just going to underwrite some bumpiness, and it'll be a slow grind better throughout 2020 if we get kind of a protracted recovery into 21.
Well, Mark, I know you've got a busy schedule and a lot of work to do over there, so I certainly appreciate your time today. And with that, we thank our audience for their interest in the Hotchkiss & Wiley High Yield Strategy. For further information, please visit www.hwcm.com or call us at 888-596-4926. Thank you very much.